Recording again. All right. Hi, it's Diane, and it is Tuesday, November 17th. I'm here with a 2 o'clock group. We've got Patricia and Tamar so far. I don't think anybody else has joined us. We may have a few others joining us later. Let's just start with a quick check-in. I know what I'd like to do for check-in, and I'm usually not with this group, is let's start with a celebration check-in. So if somebody can kind of, if you can see, you know, stretch in. I know if you've had a really rough week, it may not be easy, but, you know, find one thing that you can identify as a success in the last couple of weeks, and let's bring the energy up in the group a little bit and celebrate before we jump in on some what might be some tougher stuff. So who wants to check in first?
I can check in first on a celebrating thing.
Go for it.
My daughter, Ashley, she's 9. We've been having trouble with her getting up in the night, not staying in her bed and sleeping. And so the celebrating would be on my part on the way I'm approaching it. Even though she's 10, she's probably only 6 in her sleep issues. And every time she gets up, I just see her as a little girl. And it's just been really empowering for both of us. I'm not upset or angry. And I can just tuck her in and hold her. And if it takes all night, but she's come out of it more positive. I may have had less sleep, but she's responding to it in a less anxiety and less stress way. So even though it's not fixed anything, like as part of her sleep issues, but she's happier and I'm happier. So a little victory,
well, and
I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the reality is that this is several steps. And so, you know, step one is to kind of keep you both in problem-solving mode. And then once, you know, and keep you connected, because then you can kind of, then you can go to the place next time if you choose to continue to take aim here and get curious and start to go, okay, well, what could be going on besides the anxiety and what are some strategies we might put in place and that sort of thing. And so, but when there's anxiety going on, it's really difficult because you don't want to create another trigger for her.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good for you. Was it hard or was it easy?
It's hard because night after night, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It's tiring.
Yeah, and so now we have new problems that are new issues we need to address. But, I mean, at least I'm dealing with it in a problem-solving way instead of getting upset and nobody getting any sleep because we're all too worked up and upset by the time we go back to bed. So
It's
at least it's positive. How we're dealing
with it. Yeah, no, and I think that that's the thing is that, you know, and I don't know if Elaine talked about this, but I was doing a meditation this morning, and the quote, again, was this reminder that what we focus on, we see more of. And so if we can focus on the positive, it does shift our energy, which enables us to be, you know, engaged at a different level, and it's not easy all the time.
No.
All right. Tamar, are you willing to consider celebrating something? I know you've had a rough week.
I am. We actually had parent-teacher conferences last night, and I was honestly surprised that we really got a pretty good report despite what's going on at home with my son. The teachers are happy with him because he's fully medicated in school, so he does well in school. It's just at home that he's out of control. But I'm happy and grateful with that the teachers are happy with his work, the teachers are happy with his accomplishments. And although, you know, I will be sporting an injury for the rest of my life that he gave me, you know, at least there's some good.
Yeah, sweetie, I'm sorry. So, it's great that you can find the good in it, and knowing that he's doing better at school, even if he's having a hard time at home, you know, it's I imagine on some level a little bit of a relief that you don't have one more stressor going on with, you know, it's always easier. It's like, you know, it's like if I can just focus, it's easier to take aim if there are many things that feel a little bit under control, because then you can kind of say, okay, yeah, this is really where it's important for me to take aim right now. So do you
my biggest issue is that I don't feel safe at home with him without my husband. And my son is 10, and he, I don't feel safe.
Yeah.
So you know, I can't drive right now, and my husband was doing the shopping last night, and I was terrified.
Yeah. Well, and it's scary. And so I think that the question is, you know, how do you get to a place where you feel more comfortable being around him? You know, and I don't know kind of how much you've worked on kind of diagnosing and you know, doing trigger journals and that sort of stuff, Kamar, to know whether you have a sense of what does set him off or whether it's kind of random at this point, or where are you guys at with kind of looking at what's triggering him?
I mean, we know that there's a time of day that's pretty bad, from when he wakes up until his morning meds kick in. That's a pretty awful time, and he's not really in control. And it's a good 40 minutes that is really the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other times, you know, last night was not in those first 40 minutes, but it was, I was afraid just because, you know, it was already my second ER visit, and I, you know, from an injury from him.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know what you know your situation is, Tamar, but I would, you know, if you're in a situation where you're just afraid even to be at home, I'm getting some support to kind of really talk through and focus on that. And you know, I don't know whether you have any therapeutic support that you're exploring, but I would encourage you to consider it if you have
any. Oh yeah, no, for sure. I normally have like a weekly thing, but I've actually just contacted my weekly person to say, I think I need to come twice this week.
Good. Okay, good. So you're getting some help for yourself, but it's scary. And as much as you understand and have compassion for the fact that he's not doing it on purpose, it feels so contrary to that. I know. And it's scary just to be around it, because you never know what's going to happen and you want to protect yourself physically.
Right. I mean, I have another child at home too, and I'm scared for her.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's not a very good situation. I mean, I started making calls today to, you know, like Department of or Bureau of Developmental Disabilities and just see if I can get some respite, you know, at home. And my husband is like really upset because he said, you start making calls like that, we're going to lose him. And once you go that route, we can't go back, you know.
Mm.
And I want someone, I don't want my husband to feel like he's tied to the house either.
Yeah. See, how do you feel about how you handle it when he gets like that?
I clearly don't handle it very well.
Are you able to stay calm, or do you end up going off the handle too and escalate or de-escalate? Where do you find yourself?
I mean, I probably escalate very quickly also because, especially now when I know what could happen. But, I mean, I think, see, it doesn't happen to anyone else in the family. It happens only to me because I don't handle it well.
Hmm. Well, so that's the question is, what if there was a way for you to handle it that didn't escalate the situation, but either kept it on a consistent keel or maybe even de-escalated it? What would that be like for you?
That would be great.
So,
I mean,
yeah.
I just don't know how to get there.
Yeah. What do you notice? So are there things that you've tried, but it's been difficult? Or do you feel like you know what you want to do, but it's just hard? Or do you really not even sure what to do?
I mean, right now it's just a lot of fear. That's honestly the truth. It's a lot of fear.
Yep. Well, and so here's the thing. If you work through the fear with your weekly person, when you meet with them twice this week, you know, if you start to really focus in on the fear and you can find a way to not get triggered yourself, then my guess is that you'll be able to problem solve in a very different way than if you're panicked and afraid.
For sure.
It's funny. I've got a client that I've been working with for about 4 months now, and we literally – all we've worked on is mom and dad staying calm. And because they've got a very, explosive kid, and they know that the minute they get upset, it just magnifies the whole thing.
Right.
And so we just started with, how do you stay calm in the midst of craziness? And so I think that that's my heart for you, is you'll find a way to do that. And it's got to be hard when you're scared as much as you are, and you have every right to be scared because you've been in some really tough situations. But that feels to me like a place to focus. Tamar, does that resonate for you?
You're saying what to do if I wasn't scared?
No, just to kind of stay in that sort of, how do you stay calm, and how do you protect yourself enough that fear doesn't lead it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, all right. Well, let's go back and say, where do you want to take aim?
I guess I want to take aim in learning to manage my emotions enough so that I can feel safe.
Okay. Patricia, where do you want to take aim?
Getting my daughter to be more responsible for herself and what she needs to do instead of me doing everything for her, just for her to start.
Can you pick a particular time of day or a particular chore or something? I'm going to push you to take aim a little bit more specifically, Patricia.
Okay. Maybe with her school work. Maybe, oh gosh, which one do I pick? It's hard. Anything, or getting herself to sleep, or sleeping, her sleeping issues, or taking responsibility for her school work and homework and books and stuff, just getting that home in one piece.
Interesting. So if we're talking about realistic expectations today, and you know your daughter better than anybody, and we're doing the 3-5 challenge here, so
we'll do something smaller, and let's just realistically, if she can get her stuff home from school, and because she just comes home and throws it down and like lumps it, and then I fight with her to do homework and get everything. So I think maybe just be responsible for what she needs to do for school, getting herself prepared for school. Like,
but I heard several things in that. I heard bringing materials home. I heard dropping off materials consistently in one spot. I heard getting started in homework. I heard getting organized around homework. Which one do you think is the right place to start? Because those are really, honestly, 4 different things.
Oh, maybe organized around homework.
Okay.
That's something little, I guess. Yeah. Okay.
And so tell me what that means for you. So what does that mean for you, getting organized around homework? Knowing what to do, or organizing her area, or
organizing what she needs. So, no, organizing, like, she just comes home instead of just dropping off her stuff with all her books. She needs to know what homework she has to do, so that when we sit down, I'm not sorting and rifling through it. She needs to take control of, like, okay, I have math, I have social, I have this, and this is how, you know, I need her to at least put it in the right spots and have some sort of idea of what she has to do. If she could sit down with me and we could do it together, I guess. I think that's what I want, is her to just take a little initiative of with her school, so that I'm not just always doing it, like doing everything for her. Okay, we got to do this now. For her, just I think.
Okay, so we're gonna talk about shifting expectations today, and this would be a good one. But what I'm gonna challenge you is to reframe it just slightly. Is that okay?
Yes, please.
Okay. So my suggested reframe is that you find a way to help increase her independence around knowing what her homework is.
Yes, that's exactly perfect.
Okay. So we're not trying to get her to be independent. We're trying to increase her independence.
Yeah,
and
in a little area at a time. Yeah,
yep.
Baby steps.
Yep.
Yeah, if we can increase
baby
her independence steps in that little section, then maybe we can overflow into the rest of her life eventually.
Because I got to tell you, I've got a 16-year-old, and one of the things that I still scaffold is every day we sit down and he tells me what his assignments are for the day before he gets started on his homework. Because that step is the hardest step. But he's 16. So I just know that at 9, what you want to do, and this is what we're going to talk about today, is to set an expectation for what can she do on her own now and what's the next step towards independence. And that's really what we're going to talk about today. So,
okay.
Cool. Tamar, what do you want to take aim on?
Sorry, I was muted. Basically, just, you know, like I said before, staying calm enough to feel safe.
Okay. Staying calm. Great.
Yeah.
And I think this is a good one for you because I think that this is going to be about expectations for you and what's a realistic expectation when you're afraid. And I think that that's one of the things that we forget is that we have expectations for ourselves and sometimes they may not be realistic. And so that's something for you to just, I'm planting the seed there, Tamar, to just think about that as we're talking about expectations. So we are in the workbook on page 19 and 20, I think, is where we are.
Yeah.
And shifting expectations is the third critical response area. You know, we've talked through the parenting action model, how we take aim. Once we take aim, we take a minute, and we take the time to get curious and educate ourselves, make sure we understand what's going on in our child's brain, make sure we understand what's going on with us, what's going on in the environment. So there's that education step. And then once we've kind of educated and gathered some data, then we plan and we figure out which area do we want to focus in on. Is this about expectations? Is it about activating our child's brain? Is this about positive parenting? Is this simply about systems and structures? We'll talk about that next time, but we want to always do those in the context of something else, particularly appropriate expectations. But I really think that this is an important conversation, this shifting expectations, because when I watch parents, you know, the most ahas I see is around this area of the fact that, you know, we tend to hold a bar for our kids in a place that may not be realistic, because our kids are super brilliant, right? They're smart kids. They're gifted in many instances. Academically, they're at par. We forget this whole 3 to 5 challenge thing, which is the thing that I don't know if you guys recall this, but we teach it a lot, which is our kids are developmentally at least 3 to 5 years behind their same age peers with regard to primarily their executive function, which is the part of them that manages their impulses. It's the part of them that tells them what to do and what not to do. It's the part of them that organizes and plans. I mean, basically, it's the part of their brain that kind of runs their life. We call it like the orchestra, the conductor of the brain. In that part of their brain, they are developmentally behind. And so they look like, you know, normal 9 and 10-year-olds. They sass like normal 9 and 10-year-olds. But there's aspects of them that are really lagging. And so, you know, this isn't about lowering expectations, and we want to be really clear about this. This is about setting expectations that are realistic for your child and also for you. And the visual I like to create is that you're imagining that your child is climbing the stairs towards independence. And so let's just take, you know, one particular area. Maybe it's doing chores on a Saturday morning. And, you know, if your kids are young, maybe even, you know, the age that we're dealing with, 9, 10, elementary age, they may need us to tell them one at a time what their chores are and follow through and make sure that they're completing them, because they have a difficult time with working memory. They have a difficult time with follow through. They're easily distractible, those sorts of things. As your child gets older and older, maybe they can take a list of chores and complete them themselves and come back and show you when the list is completed. When they're even older, they might be able to write them down themselves and get them done. They may be able to do it from memory eventually. I would tell you that my kids are 14 and 16, and Saturday mornings they come down. They've had the same chores for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. Saturday morning I'm like, so what's up with your chores? They're like, oh, I have chores? What are they? And then the same chores every Saturday. And so it's kind of this sort of, it's not front of mind for them. There's not a motivation there. And I think that that's, the piece of it is that you're trying to get them from where they are to the next level of independence. So many of us stand, you know, imagine your kid climbing up that independent stairs. A lot of times we stand up at the top and kind of try to drag our kid to where we want them to be. It's like, oh, come on, you should be able to use your planner. You should be able to do this. You should be able to do that. We kind of should ourselves to death. We should our kids to death. And what it was, Elaine always says, we should all over ourselves. And instead, my challenge to you is to kind of go down and find out what step your child is on. You know, it doesn't matter where you'd like them to be. It would be nice if they were. They're not there. You want to parent the child you have, figure out what they can do independently, and then figure out what the next level would be. You know, if your child, I gave this analogy earlier today. I'm not sure if it helps or hurts, but imagine that your child ended up having to be in a leg cast right about the time they were learning how to walk. And then, you know, they were in that cast for maybe 6 months, and it was right about that time from, you know, 9 months to 24 months, and that's the time when they would normally be learning to walk. You take the cast off, and all of a sudden, do you expect them to be able to walk? Well, you're 24 months. You know, everybody knows how to walk by the time they're 24 months. Why can't you walk? No, you'd help them figure out, because they missed those steps, how to begin to learn how to walk. It's the same thing with our kids. It's so easy to go, well, you're 12. Why can't you, you know, why can't you remember to bring all your stuff home? Or why can't you clean your room on your own? Instead of saying, what can you do? And let me help you to get to that next level of independence. So this is really a way to kind of focus on moving our kids forward, but to do it in a way that really sets everybody up for success, because it can be really frustrating when our kids are not doing what we want them to do. It allows us to focus, like we were talking about last week, or last time we met, on what's working instead of what's not, and really kind of create a little bit less intense stress in the family, because you're setting expectations more realistically. So I'm curious what kind of comes up for the two of you under this conversation.
I think it's important, you know, what you were saying about, instead of saying, why can't you? I think, you know, I've learned this just from my years in therapy, that, you know, when you start with why can't you, you're never going down the good track. And mm-hmm. It's always, you know, pointing fingers at the other person, and it's not going to end up well. And I like that, really, the shift to, you know, what can you do, and more positive. I really like that, because it makes them seem more accomplished to themselves and to us, and it doesn't make them seem so lacking, and it also shows them their strengths as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, when you think about your situation, you know, if there are moments when he can modulate his emotion, and there are moments when he can't modulate his emotion, to focus in on those times that he can, and what's different, and how do you help him to notice that he's doing it, and how do you help him to manage his escalations and those sorts of things. How does that resonate with you?
Yeah, no, totally makes sense. Totally.
So what is his, you know, when you think about his emotional intensity, what's the realistic expectation for him where he's at right now?
He really has no control over himself, you know, during those 40 minutes. He just doesn't.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. What time period does he
no, those,
does he tend
those
to lose
four, those 40 minutes in the morning between when he gets up and his meds kick in.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if he doesn't have any control, if you knew that he literally has no control in that moment, how would you handle the situation differently?
I don't know. Try really hard not to get into a power struggle, because it won't end well.
Right. So is that easy for you, or is that hard?
Very hard. Very hard, because he's not, you know, if it's one thing if I'm able to just give him 100% of my attention and, you know, read to him or sit there with him, but Friday morning I was, you know, trying to get ready for a trip that I was taking by myself, and so I could not give him the attention that he desired, and it backfired in a big way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so that's the piece of it, is that it's, you know, when he is in that place of needing your attention, you know, how do you then free yourself up as much as possible, because you know that that's what he needs in that 40 minutes, so that he can, so, you know, you can help him maneuver through that time. And it may be that if you can give him a little bit of time, then he's going to feel more grounded. And you'll find, as you play with it tomorrow, as you'll figure out, does he really need you standing there all 40 minutes, or what is, how can you increase independence from that way? But if you started out by saying, look, I need to literally be with my son, walking him through this 40 minutes every day when he's not medicated, and start from there as your step that you're on, and then figure out what's that next level and how do you stay more positive and say, okay, buddy, I'm going to go and get my shirt on and you're going to do this and I'll meet you here in 2 minutes, and then you're kind of, that's that next level of independence. Or you read the next paragraph while I go put the lunches in the bag and I'll come back and we'll check back in, so it's you're starting from him needing 100% to and moving it towards you getting some space in the morning. And it makes it difficult because it's a big time commitment for you up front. How does that feel for you?
Right. It sounds like it's a lofty goal for me, because I feel like, because the fear is so apparent, because the fear is so strong, I'm just so scared, mm-hmm. that I'm going to get hurt again. And it's really very frightening to me. And yeah. and it's so sad that I have this fear of my 10-year-old.
Yeah. So what happens when you get scared tomorrow? How do you react?
Well, I mean, I've been, asking my husband to basically not leave the house while he's awake.
So I'm asking a different question. Let me interrupt you for a second. What's your emotional response when you're afraid? How do you interact with your son when you're afraid? Do you avoid him? Do you get short-tempered? What do you notice the most when you get afraid?
Short-tempered and turn into a power circle very easily.
Yeah. So how does it help you in that moment to have a power struggle?
It doesn't.
Okay.
It doesn't.
So do you remember back to the trigger management stuff? And Patricia, this might be new for you. I don't know if you ever listened to any of the stuff we do on triggers. Tamara, do you remember mm-hmm. the first steps on the triggers?
Not offhand.
Okay. So step number one is to manage your triggers and to know your triggers. And this is part of what you're uncovering, is that when you're afraid, you're more likely to get triggered. And mm-hmm. so it's in those moments, so what you're doing is great, which is prevention. I really don't, right now, until I can kind of get my confidence up, I'm not sure it's a good idea for me to be alone with him. Or, what are some other controls that you can put in place for yourself to help you to feel more safe? And then the next step is to really, when you notice that you're starting to get triggered, to stop everything and reclaim your brain. And so that means that when you start to notice yourself getting into a power struggle, you need to disengage. And you're the grown-up, and that it feels like it would be easy, but it's not always, especially if you've got a flash of temper as he does, which is, when you start to get upset, most of us have an escalation pattern. It's like one is calm, 100 is totally intense, the most intense you ever get. So when you think about how you escalate, do you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 20, 100? Do you go 1, 2, 100? What's your escalation pattern?
I don't know. I haven't really thought about it like that. I think it does go kind of like 1, 2, 60, 70, 100.
Okay. And what about him?
He's probably like 1 to 100.
1 to 100. Well, and so you guys are like matchsticks together in a powder keg. I'm like mixing my metaphors, but you know what I mean. So you both really quickly intensify, and so I think that's the piece of it, is really knowing and understanding, and maybe for a while, every time you walk into a situation with your son, you assume that you are at risk of being triggered.
Right.
How would you handle it differently? If you knew you didn't want to be triggered and you assumed you were probably going to get triggered, how would you handle it differently?
Just avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
And avoiding it would be not being alone.
So how realistic is it that you can set yourself up so that you always can avoid being alone with him?
It's not realistic, but, I mean, that's what I was talking to my husband about today.
No. Well, and I think this is the thing, is that you're going to have to figure out what's it going to take till you get – when are you going to – what is it going to look like when you're at the place where you can begin to take the risk again in being alone and trusting that you won't escalate, and which won't escalate him. And I think that that's my heart for you, is you can figure out, okay, I'm going to avoid it for a while so that I can kind of get my legs, you know, my feet wet again, and then – figure out how do I begin to manage my own fears, my own triggers, so that I can re-engage as a mom alone with my son. Does that resonate?
Yeah. It's still a little, I mean, it's a little daunting and scary to me.
Well, and so avoiding and escaping are two different things. And so if you notice that, if you avoid the situation, if you know that you're going to be 1, 2, 100, avoiding is the right place. If you can shift, if you can challenge yourself to figure out how to get to 1, 2, 3, 4, 100, then chances are you'll be able to then, before you get to that jump, take some deep breaths or take a quick time out and go back and engage and make sure that you're doing what you can to stay calm yourself. But it's really, honestly, the key here is figuring out how to manage your own triggers so that you can stay calm, so you can figure out whether staying calm is what will help him to stay calm.
Mm-hmm.
So, Patricia, what about you? What is this idea of shifting expectations? How does this tie in for you?
I think I need to be... I have two little girls. One is 6 and Ashley is 9. And I think I need to just do every day after school I'm thinking together, because if Ashley's kind of 6, then we need to just do this together. This is what we do when we go home. What do you have your homework? Lay it out and just talk through it with both of them and have them every day say, okay, what do you have and what do you have? And just initiate them asking them questions and say, why can't you just organize this, like you said, like just to shift it to what can you do, what can you tell me, what do you know that you have today, and let's have a look. And I think just, and instead of me just doing it for her, okay, this is your math, this is your language, let's do this, okay, so instead of me just going ahead and being frustrated and doing it, I need to say, okay, show me what you have and let's look through it. And if she can do it with me, then, and if she can't, then take a break and let's come back to it when she can, right? I think.
Well, or just shift, again, to shift your expectations, because that's what you're trying to find out, is what can she reasonably do on her own. And so for both of you, part of this is modeling. So it's kind of if our kids don't know how to manage their triggers, or our kids don't know how to organize their day, kind of explicitly saying, okay, mom's going to take a few deep breaths right now because I'm starting to get upset. Or mom's going to go take a break and I'm going to come back in 5 minutes. Or, okay, the next step is let's get our backpacks out and go see if we can find a list of stuff from the teacher. Or whatever it is, but you're kind of really being more transparent about what you're doing rather than just doing for, which helps them to learn, you know, because that's really the first step. The first step is I do it for you. Second step is I do it and you watch me. And the third step is, you know, maybe we do it, I do it, and then you show me how you can do it too. And then maybe it's you do it and I check you. And then, you know, so there's all these stair steps of independence. And so you're kind of taking them step by step.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I've just been doing it and getting frustrated.
Yeah. So how would it change things for you, Patricia, if you began to work with the girls simultaneously at the same level?
How would it change it for me?
Yeah.
I think maybe I would get less frustrated, I'm hoping, instead of trying to go back and forth between what they should each be doing. And so I can find out exactly where she's at and what she's capable of doing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just expecting her to do it. Yeah. Maybe, and then it could help in other areas too.
So give me an example.
Just like getting ready for school in the morning, or getting ready for, you know, her gymnastics or anything, or just taking a little initiative in any area of her life, like just to step back or to see where she's at, to see like what she can actually do without me just having to do it for her, because she's not doing it either quick enough or isn't doing it at all. I don't know, maybe coach her through some of the things. Okay, this is what we do to get ready for this. Okay, now you do this. Maybe you try it tomorrow or something. I don't know.
Yeah, no, and I think what you're describing is that this is a foundational principle. I mean, and think that that's the piece of it. In any challenge, kind of seeing where our kids are at in terms of their ability to handle a situation is an important step. I think it's kind of almost like the first step in shifting expectations sits in that education step, which is really what is my child capable of doing independently?
Yeah. It's frustrating. It's frustrating because she can do it. I know that she can do it when she wants to do, like when she wants to do it, when she's motivated about, you know, like if there's something that she wants to do, she's very capable.
So can I offer you a slight reframe on that?
Mm-hmm.
She's able to do it when her brain is motivated.
Right.
And it's a very subtle difference, because the language that you're using sounds like, well, sometimes she doesn't want to, and that's why it doesn't happen. And the reality is, it's not that she doesn't want to, it's that her brain isn't motivated. And there's a subtle difference in that. How does that resonate for you?
Yeah, that makes sense. It takes the blame off of her, and more, not the blame, but it puts the reality into it, I guess. It's not she's doing it to be bad.
She's not willful. It's just, you know, the reality is with the ADHD brain, if the ADHD brain is motivated, it can do all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, it's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant brain. But if it's not motivated, it literally can't do anything. I mean, and I don't have an ADHD brain, but that's what I've heard ADDers describe to me over and over again, is that if the motivation is not there, it's like impossible to make it happen.
Yeah.
So it's that subtle difference between can't and won't. And I think that language shift can really help you in terms of looking at it differently.
Okay.
Somebody join us from California?
Yes, it's me, Sarah. I'm super late, but I wanted to join you guys still.
Hey, Sarah. I'm on with Tamar and Patricia. It's Diane. And
hi.
We were talking about shifting expectations, and Patricia was just talking about homework and about how if she really does kind of look at it as if her daughter is kind of in that 3 to 5 challenge, and kind of accept what she can do and challenge her to the next level, it really is much more helpful than if she gets frustrated because she's not doing what she wants her to do. So do you want to just do a quick check-in and let us know how things have been going at your place?
I don't want to distract anything because I am late. Things are going pretty well for me. I'm learning that my child is very, very, I've known this, but I'm learning that he's very strong-willed. He's not going to change anything if he doesn't want to. I've got to figure out how to handle that.
Well, and it's interesting, I don't know if I said this earlier, but the quote that keeps coming back to me is, parent the child you have.
Right.
You know, it's so hard because there are many days that we wish we had a different child standing there in front of us, but it's it can be mind-numbing. So,
yeah.
Tamar, I see you fell off and you came back.
I got a call in between and I accidentally disconnected.
Okay, cool. All right, so any other thoughts on, I don't know, Sarah, if you read the section on shifting expectations, The main key is just kind of meeting your child where they are and challenging them to the next level of independence, rather than kind of wishing they were somewhere other than they were, and really looking at, you know, what are the competencies, and I think one of the challenges that we have with expectations is that sometimes we as parents start to catastrophize. I don't know if you've heard that word before, but it's kind of like, you know, okay, they can't pack their backpack on their own when they're 9. That suddenly means that they're not going to get into the college of their choice, or they're going to end up, you know, or if they're throwing toys at their brother, that suddenly it means they're going to end up in jail. And I think that that's one of the things that you know, it's easy to kind of go into that awfulizing and that kind of, I call it future tripping. And it's pretty normal, but it also doesn't often help you to problem solve. And so it's really important that we kind of stay in the present. Again, parent the child we have, you know, figure out where they're at and how to move them forward. So thoughts from everybody.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, because I get overwhelmed. Like, she can't even do her homework or take her backpack or take care of that. How is she ever going to, like, ride the bus to, you know, how, like, you panic about the future, because if she can't organize grade 4, how is she going to organize grade 6, and how is she going to graduate, and how, you know, like, you just snowballs.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard. Right. I mean, I think that particularly because grade 4, you know, the age that our kids are is the age at which they're teaching them to organize, and their brain's really not ready to do it yet.
Right.
And so here's the good news is that you guys are here. You're getting yourself supported. And so you know that when they get to be grade 6 and grade 7, you know, your job is going to help them to figure out, okay, now I'm ready to put a little bit more organization into my day. How do I do that? And, I, you know, my kids are in high school, and they're now at the point where they want to have their own systems. And it was funny because last night I was talking to my son, and you know, I hold him accountable to have a process for tracking his assignments. I don't tell him what that needs to be. And he said to me last night, he goes, you know, Mom, he says, you know, some days I'm going to do this and some days I'm going to do that, and it's not going to be the same every day, and you just got to deal with it. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, I don't need you to use the same thing every day, but just I'm holding you accountable to have something every day. And I think his brain gets bored. And so, you know, on Mondays he'll use the planner. On Tuesdays he'll put a piece of paper in his pocket. On Wednesdays he'll do something else. But, you know, you want to allow your kids to be who they are and give them the space. And it'll happen. Your kids have lots of time. Your kids are all, you know, elementary age, and you've got at least, you know, how many years before they ultimately even need to leave your house. So trust the process.
That makes sense.
Sarah, what comes up for you around this idea of expectations? Oh, did you put us on mute? She might have put us on mute.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Yay! I double muted you on my phone and on my car.
You double muted us? I don't even know what that means.
Neither do I until now.
That's so funny.
You know, I think I do have to expectations because I think I have an ideal of what I want things to be, just like in my house, and then my son and what he's able to. I just think about when he plays with stuff, he brings out everything. Everything under the sun, no matter how often I said, you bring one thing out, you're done playing with it, put it back, and start the other thing. He can't do that for some reason. I don't know why. But I don't think he can. I think as basic for me as that sounds, I don't think he's capable of doing that. I don't know.
Yep. Your instinct is right on if he's consistent with every other ADD kid that I know. It's the sequencing. So it's kind of like when they decide they're gonna do something else, they get hyper focused on that other thing and nothing else exists. So it's kind of like I'm playing with the truck. And all of a sudden I see the ball and the truck doesn't exist anymore because there's only now.
Right.
So how could you adjust your expectation in that instance?
I don't know. That's what I'm struggling with.
Um, So is it, it's not realistic that he can remember to put it away automatically. Is it realistic that he can remember to put it away with a prompt, which might be the next level of independence?
But I feel, yes, but at the, well, I feel like I have to prompt him several times for him to finally do it. And by that time, I'm nagging him, and he's mad at me, you know, because I'm annoying at that point.
Well, and so there's several pieces to that, Sarah. So, you know, one is making sure that you really do have his attention when you prompt them, and it's so easy to do. It's like, we'll holler down the stairs. We won't make eye contact. You know, it's like if you really want to get your child's attention, you've got to tap them on the shoulder, make sure they're looking at you. You know, maybe use the get it, got it, good tool that we teach, which is, you know, just to make sure that they actually understood what we asked them to do. You know, it may not be realistic that he can, it may not be realistic that he's able to do it with one prompt. I mean, I think about,
yeah.
You know, so with it's a transition, right? So I'm playing with the truck. I got to go and put the ball away first. That's a transition, and I'm hyper-focused, and my brain's over here with the truck. It's a big switch over for me to go over and work with the ball. And, you know, our kids have, what is it? They have a Ferrari brain and bicycle brakes. So I'm over here a million miles an hour on the train or whatever, the toy, and I've got to switch gears. And so, again, it's, you know, what's the realistic expectation? Is it realistic that he can put things away with one prompt? Is it realistic that he can put things away when you stand there and watch him do it and you know, and he has a motivation to do it? You know, so if he puts stuff away and you say, great job, thank you so much, is that enough of a motivation for him? Or does he get, you know, or is there some kind of other intrinsic motivation for him that's going to help him to remember to put stuff away, that sort of stuff?
Well, how long should I be giving him? Like, how much time is... I don't think I give him enough time. I know that about myself. I need to make sure I need to adjust that.
So what do you mean, give him enough time to do what?
So I ask him to put something away. He says, okay, Mommy, and continues to do what he's doing. And then I'm like, okay, put it away. You know, I don't know how much time I should be waiting before I give him that next prompt.
Okay, that's a really good question. So if your child has two times, he has now and he has not now, how much time should you give him? More time or less time?
More time, I think. Obviously more than what I want to give him.
Well, and I think that this is the thing, is that, so question number one is, what is it about putting things away right now that's important to you? And then, so what's the answer to that one?
Because for me, I like things tidy and put away, because that makes me feel not living in chaos helps me mentally.
Okay.
I'm more settled and where things are where they should be. And that's my problem. I know that.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, I'm glad that you acknowledge that. And so you're trying to enroll your son in doing something that will help you, right?
Yeah.
So
right.
So I guess the question is, you know, where do you zig and where do you zag? Where do you let go a little bit? Where do you, you know, where do you take aim? And you know, is it about helping him to learn the habit of cleaning up after himself, which might be different than the habit of putting things away immediately when he's done before he shifts to something else?
Yeah. You know, it is definitely about so he can have that skill.
Which one?
Skill, you know. No, that is it. That's what I just said. That, so that he will do it on his own at some point when I'm without me.
So, no, I'm sorry. Like, there are two different things, though. So if you think about it, like right now, I don't know what's in your – think about your kitchen right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you're cooking dinner, are you the kind of person that you get the flour out and then you put the flour back and then you get the sugar out and then you put the sugar back and then you get the eggs out and then you put the eggs back? Or are you the kind of person that gets everything done, brings everything out, and makes the stuff and then – you know, when you're ready to clean up everything, you clean up everything at once. Do you see that's a different processing?
Let's say that last part again. What?
It's a different way to it's a different way to process.
Yeah, no, I see that's different. Yeah, it's different. So
it sounds like and I may be off here, Sarah, but it sounds like not only do you want him to do something, but you want him to do it in a certain way, and that might be an opportunity for you to kind of go, ooh, can I help him find his own way for doing things?
Okay. Yeah.
Because if he played in a chaotic living room, but he cleaned it up perfectly before he went to bed at night, would you care?
I want it to be done as he goes along. Because it's kind of everywhere. Well, because we're stepping on everything. There's a huge mess.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's in our living space. It's not like if it was just in his room, I wouldn't care.
I think that's the piece of it is that you've got to figure out what's a realistic expectation, what that means in terms of how you get involved and how much you help.
Yeah. Okay.
So cool.
Okay.
All right. Other thoughts on this topic generally before we wrap up?
Just your point that you made is really good, interesting, because it's like, are we asking our kids to do something because that's how we want it to done, or are we asking our kids to do something because we want them to learn something?
And it might be different. I mean, the reality is that there may be more than one way to do something. And part of what we want to acknowledge is our kids' brains might work completely different than ours.
Yeah. So it's just struck a chord there, like, maybe there's another way to do it besides mommy's way.
But the other thing, and this may not apply, Sarah, to you, but it's like, you know, a lot of times we do things because we want it done.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like I still recall very distinctly a point at which my kids' rooms were both really chaotic, and I realized, you know what, I want their room cleaned. They don't care. It's their room. I can close the door and achieve the same outcome.
Yeah.
Or I can clean their room and their room gets clean, you know, and so I have other choices than getting frustrated when they don't keep their room clean.
Yeah.
So, okay, so I'm going to wrap up, and I know, Sarah, you were running a little bit late, but we're on the, if you can kind of just play with us a little bit on the wrap up. And what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success with this action? So just take a minute, jot down some notes, and would love to hear from you guys in terms of an aha you had, or more than one aha if you want, and an action commitment. And while you're doing that, next week is Thanksgiving week. There's a Lifeline call on Tuesday at lunchtime, noon East Coast time, and then the PSS groups will meet again the week of the 30th, that first week in December.
Okay.
So who wants to check out first?
I can if you like.
Go for it.
So my focus, I think, is I want to help Ashley independence with her homework. That's what I want to focus on and most important to take most attention to. For my clarity and takeaway is I'm going to, instead of saying, why can't you do this, I'm going to shift it to more of what can she do and see what she can do every day. And realistically is to see where she's at. And like really see where she's at and maybe do it together with the girls. And for my action is, do it together with the girls, to have them watch me do it with me what they need to do, and then have them do it on their own. And so just like baby steps, I think.
Great. Is there anything you need to do to set yourself up for success?
Have patience.
Patience, there you go. It's not easy to shift directions like that. No, you're right. I think that's good.
Cool. Yeah, just have patience and stay calm.
Yeah. Okay. Tomorrow.
Okay. So my focus and I paid attention to today was really taking my son to the next level of independence and doing, you know, what's good for them, not only good for me. I really like my clarity or takeaway. I like the parent, the child you have. I'm still struggling with really acceptance of, you know, the fact that this is my child and this is what I have to deal with. And it's a big struggle for me. Realistic action is trying to find his strengths and what he's capable of rather than focusing on what he can't do and to really model independence for him. And to set myself up is just whatever I can do to stay calm.
Yeah.
You know, to set myself up for success.
Well, and I think that that's honestly, it's, you know, I think that that it may be, and I don't know your son at all, but I know that for myself, when I got really vulnerable with my kids and let them know that I was working on staying calm and not yelling, that they went, oh, mommy doesn't want to yell. And they, you know, they appreciated it. And then we could all kind of work on it together because it wasn't, they got so many things that they're supposed to work on. It's like, if we're working on something together, it really shifted it for them. And it's like, okay, everybody's going to work on staying calm. How can we help each other to stay calm? And mommy really needs help. You know, when I start to get upset, this is what, you know, this is what would help me, that sort of thing.
Right.
So, okay.
I mean, I just need that. I just need that to overpower my fear.
Yeah. Well, and I think that ultimately you're going to have to get to a place where you trust, and it's scary for you right now, and it makes perfect sense that it is. And so that's kind of my question is kind of like, what would it take for you to begin to regain some trust in yourself and the situation so that you felt safe enough not to be constantly on edge?
Well, I need to know that I can be home alone and not get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So that's, I see we've got one person just joined us. I'm wondering whether we had a time zone question. Did somebody, oh, you know what?
Yeah, it's Carrie. I'm on Pacific time. Is that?
Yeah. I'm so sorry. That's my fault completely, Carrie, because I said noon, and it was noon my time, not your time.
Oh, crud. Okay, so noon your time is 9 a.m. my time.
Yep, that's the Tuesday call. Let me stay on for a second and help you find another call this week that'll work for you and everybody else. So, Sarah, do you want to just wrap up real quick, and then I'll stay on with Carrie real quick and get her on another call.
My focus is going to be to just to see what my motivation is when I'm wanting him to clean up, and you know, I can't think of the other questions you had in mind. Answer. I know it's the same every week, but I don't. Elaine usually walks us through, so I was driving. I don't have them.
Okay. So the first one is what was your clarity? You know, what was your aha? And then what's your commitment? Are the two that I would love to hear.
Okay. So my clarity is that same as Tamar is that, you know, to parent the child that I've got, you know, and just because I do things a certain way doesn't mean he's going to do them the same way, and that's okay. He can do them a different way as long as he can. Whoa. And I just needed to determine what my motivation is. So I'm just going to focus on that and try to.
Okay.
Yeah. So, sorry, it's okay.
Okay, cool. All right, anything else?
Nope.
Awesome. All right, guys.
Thank you.
Talk to you
Thank
soon.
You very much.
Bye.
Thanks so much. Have a good week.
Bye.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye.